Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082. Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Yeah, this is the poet Benjamin Zephaniah coming down your radio wire, and you are listening to Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM, my friend.
Hi, I'm Eddie Grant, and you're listening to Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
1-2-1-2, how's it going? This is Shlomo. You're listening to Sheffield Live.
Yeah, welcome to Sweet Talking Sport on Sheffield Live. So, we've got a G who's going to be on his way, so probably going to be kind of interrupted while obviously he passes security and I'd let him indoors. But, if this is your first time, I hope you're going to enjoy the ride for a little bit of a Sweet Talking Sport, on 93.2, also available on DAB Radio. Like I said, G is going to be, on his way very shortly, so going to be a little bit interrupted. CV being put on gardening duty, for various reasons, but that will remain kind of private. But a little bit of background tunes also as well, get you in the mood on this Friday evening. And we're going to set off with F1. Yeah, so like I said, we're going to kick off with a little bit of F1, which is Formula 1. It's all getting heated on the track with Max Verstappen, the Belgian, given one place penalty for impeding George Russell from GB. Apparently, driving unnecessarily slow in Qatar last weekend. You don't really expect that from F1 racing. You know, it's normally kind of like you get your a little bit of nitty gritty and stuff, but generally I'd say that's a clean sport. But these days it's getting a little bit heated up. George Russell says Max Verstappen cannot deal with adversity as his Mercedes driver responded to the world champion's comments that had lost all respect for him. Verstappen was unhappy about the role Russell played in the Red Bull driver being given a one place penalty. I mean, people might think, do you know what? One place, not a big deal, but it is. It's seconds, yeah? And like I said, just going to take a little commercial break because I'm going to let G into the studio. Hold tight. like I say, a little hitch there, but G is in the studio now. We're just going to like kind of tune him in to make sure that we can hear him loud and clear. So might take a while this, but that's what you get with the live radio. Yes, G.
Yes,
take time with the noise, you know. Yeah, go wake up people, you know, G.
Yeah, people. Well, go on.
Yep. You there?
Yeah, man, I'm there. Well, go on, people. Out of breath, you know.
Well, you do a little bit of running, yeah?
Yeah. Can't believe how busy it is round here this week for parking, man.
Speak up in that mic. Project it. Yeah.
We're there. Let's go.
Yeah. So, like I said, we're just kind of kicking off the show with a bit of F1. It's getting heated out there on the track. Max Verstappen, the Belgian, being given a one-place penalty. Now, people might think, do you know what? One place is no big deal. But that's seconds. And seconds can be critical in the championships. Yeah, and it's almost like there's two, because like there's a driver who collects points for an individual, and there's also points for his team. So, you know, like I said, bit of adversity going off as a Mercedes driver responded to the world champion's comments that he had lost all respect for him. Verstappen was unhappy, so he had a face on, right, about the role Russell played in the Red Bull driver being given a one-place penalty, which demoted him from pole position. And like I said, some people might think, yeah, one place penalty is no big deal, but you know, pole position is obviously number one on the podium. But Russell said at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix on Thursday, I don't know why he felt the need for this personal attack, you know, and I'm not going to take it, you know, so he's coming out fighting. And like I said, it's very rare you hear these F1 drivers, you know, spitting the dummy out and having a bit of a spat. But, you know, some people might tell me different, you know, who follow it week in, week out, or season after season. I'm not around the circuit and stuff, but I just thought I'd just share this with you. Anyway, this is this is me just setting the record straight, yeah? Not me personally, but I'm saying what the driver's saying. I'm not going to stand here and let somebody slam me personally. Russell said that after they left the stewards' room in Qatar after qualifying. Verstappen swore while saying he would purposely go out of his way to crash into me, which is very dangerous, and put my head in the wall. Now, you know, I mean, you probably would get that in boxing, G, but in F1, it's unheard of.
Not when it comes to Max Verstappen, it isn't. With Max, you see, Max like his own way and everything else. He's a bully driver.
Mm-hmm.
When he's got pole position and he's run, he's happy as Larry. But when other people either maybe, I haven't seen that race yet, I've not watched it yet, so I don't know, but I've been hearing the news about it.
Yeah.
Max doesn't like when other people get control of him, when he can't pass them or something goes off. I remember a race between him and Lewis Hamilton before he won the championship, mm-hmm, and stuff. And if it wasn't for that new guard, what they had put on the car, he would have took Lewis's head off, because his car mounted on top of Lewis's with aggressive driving and went upon the corner. If it wasn't for that new guard they put on, he would have took his head off. Now, I've seen little bits about this, about it with Russell and Max. But like Russell says, somebody has to stand up to him because he is a bully.
Yeah.
When he doesn't get his way, he spits the dummy out every time. But he's got competition now. Russell's been pretty good. He's been better than Hamilton. You've got Norris that's coming through now, that's giving him headache. You've got Leclerc that's standing his ground. There's a few drivers now that are getting better. And that's what he seems to be struggling with, because he's got proper competition. I mean, Lewis now, I hope when he goes to Ferrari and thing, I mean, there's been a hoop around like that. But if Lewis gets back in the race, we shall see what happens between them two.
It doesn't seem to be as sharp as like, you know, few years ago. It was kind of busting it large, but, you know, whether the other drivers are sort of catching up on him.
Cars are getting better.
Or, you know, I know that he was on about his Mercs and stuff, not being as prim as he kind of like would like. But, you know, that's something else. I mean, Russell's comments to Max Verstappen, spoke to the Dutch publication Die Telegraaf, and accused the Mercedes driver of being a backstabber and a loser, adding he lies and all kinds of things to get together that aren't true, puts things together. That's what he's trying to say. Yeah, it's kind of crazy, you know. I mean, like you said, G, you know, people have been bullied by Max Verstappen for years.
Yes.
You know, in Qatar qualifying, the two drivers tangled at the turn 12, forcing Russell onto the gravel. Verstappen was penalised for driving unnecessarily slower and found to have been well outside the target time required of the drivers when not on a flying lap.
Yeah, because Russell nearly crashed into him and they were going that slow.
Yeah,
it's like a bit of action. It looks like that was before the race had restarted, which Max has got control and stuff like that to start the match again. But that's just Max Verstappen the way he is. I mean, when he won the race in the first time with Lewis Hamilton, when the director then had changed all these rules, he had moved three cars out of his way to give him a chance to win. And Lewis was on old tyres by then. Max had just changed his tyres a couple of laps ago. There was no way was Lewis going to win this now. And from there on in, that's where a lot of controversy started off with Max Verstappen.
I mean, is there any particular driver who you follow?
Oh, I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. I have been from it came on the scene. Guys won, what is it, 7, 8 championships, whatever else. If he can win another one, I mean, Max will be sat behind him, whatever else, in that respect. But Lewis, he can be aggressive sometimes, but that's the racing for you. When you got two drivers that are good and they both can be aggressive, it's a wicked thing to watch, you know what I mean? But Max will take it that one step further as if to bully you out of the way. You know what I mean? But like I said, Lando Norris now, he's making a mark, and then you've got this new guy that's just starting, Piastri, who's on the same team as Lando Norris. I mean, he's a wicked driver. He's come on, he's won a couple of races already, so he has got competition. He's got some serious drivers that are coming up now, and they all want to win.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of like looking at the championships on the table. I mean, you've got Max Verstappen out in front.
But he's won now, hasn't he? The constructor.
He's all over, all done and dusted.
Well, he's the champion now for this season, whatever. He's won
the
points, and so I think it's just the collector's championship now, whatever's going on with them. Not sure what the points are.
Just kind of like seeing how far Mr. Hamilton come. Well, he's in 12th position, and still with Mercs. I mean, there were strong rumours of him kind of like going over. I think it was across to Red Bull, wasn't it?
No, but Ferrari.
Ferrari, but
it just
didn't happen, or, you know?
It happens at the end of the season. Next season, when next season starts, he should be in the red car.
Wow. I mean, he's going to be 40.
Yeah, he wants to end his career with Ferrari. I mean, that was always the team. Wow. That was his childhood dream, to drive with Ferrari. He's been given that chance now, so I don't blame him for taking it. He's done a lot for Mercedes.
Yeah,
he's won his championship with Mercedes. So,
I mean, I'm not sure what kind of age they look to retire, you know, at top of the tree in F1.
Alonso's about 42 now. 43,
okay. So you'd say that Hamilton's got a few years left in him,
then.
He's only 39, unless other things kind of like happen. I mean, he's
got time to win a couple more championships.
Yeah,
easy.
He's been the flag bearer, hasn't he, for a while, and you've got the up and coming, you know, like all the other F1 drivers, but 12, that kind of does surprise me. I mean, even you're saying that Bottas is kind of like 11th, Norris 10th, another driver from GB, Alonso 7th, I'm just kind of like going through a few names, and then Russell, the highest ranked GB driver, lying in fourth position. But yeah, Max.
Is this from the race on Saturday or something that's gone right?
No, I'm just going through the tables of where they stand at this moment in time, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, on to Estian. The kind of like this is kind of like the horses, how they perform. I mean, I'm going to talk about Charlotte Dujardin.
Can't believe that.
Say again?
Can't believe that.
39-year-old, most decorative female Olympian. I don't know if you've seen it, but I actually saw it online.
I saw it,
where
yeah.
she was whipping a horse several times. Yeah. I mean, Charlotte says that she will forever aim to do better following a one-year ban and a fine of around about 8,886. I mean, before I go into that story, do you think a one-year ban is sufficient enough for... I mean, you're talking cruelty to animals, aren't you, big time? One-year ban, what do you reckon?
Well, they've really banned her for what she's done. I mean, yeah, I mean, 20 lashes on the chop, whatever else. It's always the same again when she was apologising, just like that footballer. So it's something they've done before. She's just never been caught.
Mm.
And she's been caught now. I mean, 1 year ban, first offence from the sport, yeah. But if you're going to bring the cruelty into it now, then that's a different ballgame, isn't it?
But, I mean, but you know, like, if it was... if it was a member of the public, say, and somebody saw somebody whipping a dog, you know,
or
excessively.
Even horse people, don't they?
For the example of this, what I'm going to say, if a member of public reported somebody to the RSPCA, said that this person's abusing this dog, whipping it, I don't think they'd be given a one-year ban. I think that ban would be severe.
Yeah, they'll get more than that. They probably won't be able to keep animals for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
100%.
Easy.
So, plus, you know, why can't it, you know, apply to Charlotte?
Same, innit?
You know?
She's a celebrity. She's represented
definitely.
England and stuff. It's the same story all around.
I mean, the fine. I mean, she'll be able to pay that, no problem.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? And, you know... Still, I think she still can obviously train, but she can't compete. You know what I mean?
Yet.
So she may kind of like, you know, have kind of like other riders and you know, kind of like be some kind of like advisor to upcoming young riders. That probably sounds a little bit better. But yeah, if you've just joined us, listen to Sweet Talking Sport. We've got G here.
Yes.
And... We started the show by talking about, you know, F1 getting in the fast lane, talking about the Belgian Max Verstappen and Russell, all getting heated up on the track. Verstappen being given a one place penalty for impeding.
He should have got more than that.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely,
you know,
got more. It's not the first he's done something, but he's the golden boy at the moment, isn't he?
Like we say, he's a bit of a bully, is Verstappen out there. On the track, I wonder what it's like on the road.
Road rage and all
that kind of stuff probably kicking off from Verstappen.
He got done last year, I think it was, for speeding in one of his Mercedes cars. He got over them. He didn't get a ban; he just got a fine and stuff, whatever else. But you know, but when you got them fast cars, you're gonna do it sooner or later on, yeah.
And then into the Esquire unit with Charlotte Dujardin. You know, following her 1 year ban and an 8,886 fine for excessively whipping a horse around its legs. Video footage has been seen on the internet. And this came to light, I think it was in July, days before the Paris 2024. Dujardin withdrew from the Olympics, admitting she was the person in the video. Well, you know, I don't think you could get away from that, could you?
No.
Yeah.
No way.
I mean, Dujardin's international ban handed out by the FEI the world governing body of Esquerian sports, is backdated to the start of the provisional suspension, and she will be eligible to compete again from July 2025, which, you know, January is round the corner. It doesn't seem to be that really long, does it? I mean, what will she do? She'll just go on gardening duty, won't she? She'll just go on holiday or something.
She can still do. She just can't compete, but she's not barred from doing anything with the horses or within the stables or anything. They've not said anything about that. They were just talking about the shame that she's brought on the sport within the British team and stuff like that, which, yeah, they're in the limelight now because of that, even though it's focused on her. But yeah, there's things she can still do and whatever else. So, you know, there's nothing stopping her from riding the horses. There's nothing stopping her from going around training around the track and everything. She just cannot compete.
Can't compete in the tournaments and stuff. So it's probably, I mean, what we're saying is probably not really that severe.
It isn't really.
You know, I mean, you know, I presume that the 8,886 quid, probably just say, you know, where can I pay it or something like that. You know, there's no doubt about that. I mean, the British Esquerian and the British Dressage have also backed the suspension, preventing Jejani from competing in the national competition of training events during the same period.
Oh, right, okay then.
Yeah, yeah.
So she obviously has to home gardening then, although it's a bit cool now for that.
So, I mean, fully respected the verdict issued by the Federation of Esquerian Sports, FEI, released today, Jejani said, after the Federation has recognised my actions in the video. It does not reflect who I am and can only apologise again. I understand the responsibility that comes with my position in the sports, and I will forever aim to do better.
Does not reflect who I am. How many times have we heard that? That's what I'm talking about. That one sentence there. How many of them have said that it does not reflect who I am?
And they all seem to come with, they seem to get the violin out as well, don't they?
Yeah,
they
all then, start singing.
You know, undoubtedly, being one of the darkest, and most difficult periods of my life. You know, I mean, you know, come on.
That's foolishness, isn't
it? I mean, she's got a year ban. She's back in action in July next year. And, you know, got a fine of 8,886 quid, you know. She goes on to say that she takes this opportunity to thank everyone who has supported her during this time. Do you know what I mean? Giving a ban and you're thanking people.
It's like there's a script. And it just gets a few words edited here and there what all these sports people seem to use.
100%.
You know what I mean? She's been doing this. It's not the first she's done it. And obviously other people know she's been doing it. Obviously they've not pulled her in to check and said, you need to stop this. And somebody might have mentioned it before, but they filmed her doing it now.
I mean, that was probably done for a reason, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Somebody's thought, you know what?
They're not doing anything, so let me put it online.
Either there must have been a little bit of fallout or something like that, or something's happening, or somebody's asked for a bit more cash and they're saying, do you know what, you'll get your pay rise next year or something. And they've thought, do you know what, I'm going to film this and I'm going to go public with it, you know.
But it looks bad though, she's a champion. She's won how many things for England, and you're doing that. So even that alone could wind somebody up where they say, you know what, I'm going to let them see.
I mean,
what she's doing herself, who's supposed to be, she's at top of the game.
I mean, 6 Olympian medals.
There you go.
Comprising 3 gold and a silver and 2 bronze.
There you go.
Are the joint most any British female Olympian, alongside from former track cyclist Dame Laura Kennis. 5 gold and a silver.
Not even Princess Anne achieved that. And she used to do the same thing, what she's doing now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a shame that it's happened that particular way.
But at the end of the day, though, they've dealt with it, which is more than I can say. I'm going to bring it up here, which is more than I can say, but it's football as well. In other sports, they seem to come down and do something. Regardless of how much we might say it's not enough and that, but they've done something. And it does look bad on a country to get banned for a year.
True.
In the public eye now, we're watching it on the
Definitely. Yeah, it's approaching 18:25 on Friday the 6th. He listens to Sweet Talking Sport. I've got G in the studio. CV's been put on gardening duty from, we had, a little incident and we said, just take five, So he's just sitting it out, But hopefully he'll be back next week. Rugby Union.
Go on.
Rugby Union on to Joe Marler, 34-year-old guy, played for Harlequins and England as a prop. Which, if you're not familiar with Rugby Union, a prop dominates the scrum. They're the biggest and the strongest, and they push the scrum forward. So, Marler, unfortunately, suffering mental health. Which, we've covered various sport athletes with the mental health. But Joe Marler talks about his low points still affecting him. And it must be difficult, like we say, to be, a top athlete, former England prop, like I said. Says, he has his ups, he has his downs. I've been a test rugby player, continued to affect his mental health right up until his retirement last month. 34-year-old, called an end to his career. I think it was round about autumn. After being included in the England squad for the matches, he played a final farewell game for the Harlequins on Friday before quitting the game entirely. Mental health can affect a lot of people. In fact, everybody's got mental health. It's how you actually manage it on a day-to-day basis. Unfortunately, some people, have to be sort of like, sectioned. That's the extreme end of it. Like I said, it's how you tend to manage it on a day-to-day basis. Everybody seems to got like a baseline. And, for those people who've got capacity, it's what your baseline is. As an individual, how to function. I'm not surprised, really, because when you think about how many years they've been training to get top of their game, the training, the travelling, some away from the family, the pressure to win, to recover from injuries and stuff, it's absolutely massive. And if you've been a big super out there for your team, Harlequins are no kind of like
pushover, are they?
Yeah, no kind of pushover team. Quite rightly said, what G's been saying. To all of a sudden, you think, what am I going to do? And like probably a lot of athletes, just think of being a Dan in their particular sport. And had nothing else to fall back on. I just think that's a bit of a shame, really. Post-tour campaign, there's a nut when you have been used to a schedule of putting in front of you. So what Marla's saying is that this is who we're playing. You've got the coach and going through certain set plays, who's playing, the lineups, the scrums, what he expects and stuff like that. You've got the other side of it, the nutrition side of it, you've got the resting side of it. And when that's all gone or taken away from you via, whether it's injury or whether you've just retired because you've come to the end of your kind of like career.
Yeah.
It's massive.
It's very massive. This is what I was saying about, that's the one thing I do with the Americans for, where you have this process to get into certain sports, you have to get an education along with it. And I do think we in the UK need to adapt certain things like that. And I mean, this guy's been on top of his game for XYZ amount of years. He's a good forward or whatever else. He's played his position and he's held it. He might play a couple other positions, but still, you get to an age now where you know you're coming to the end of your career and you've got nothing else to fall back into. You've still got all your bills to pay. You've got your kids to look after, whatever else. What are you going to do?
Yeah,
this is why I do absolutely. Think a lot of people that need to have certain kind of an education to fall back on where they can train into something else. Because literally now, he's got to start again, like from leaving school, to go and find employment and stuff. And
I hear that. Some good points you're making there, because it's not the first time you've made them points as well, really, about, you know, how education is kind of like really important for those who are bidding to be a sport athlete, no matter what your discipline may be, you know. You know, I mean, it Marla says that he came home, it was summer holidays, and wanted to spend as much time as possible with the kids and the family. The therapist was texting him, trying to set up another appointment, but he felt really good and thought, you know, he would crack on. But that is time. You want to deliver into stuff and you're struggling to stay on top of it, trying to get it sorted. The old school way, mindset of, you know, feeling good, don't need any help type of stuff. How many times have people said that?
I mean, because remember, like rugby, now certain sports, they don't pay a big wage package. Not like your boxing, your F1, your footballers. When they get to a certain age, when they retire, now a lot of them can retire comfortably.
True.
They don't need to worry about where they're going to find the next job or anything like that, because they're set. But rugby doesn't pay such a big wage, you know what I mean? So he's going to need something else. And I think that's the wrong attitude a lot of us men have, actually, where we think we can do it. We are men, we're not supposed to do this. And we crumble more.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he said that he didn't really speak about his mental health during his career, describing his crying on the way to training and tracking his kitchen. You know, antidepressants and all that kind of stuff, you can get hooked on them. But, you know,
if
there's anybody out there, you know, talk to somebody. You know, it's good to talk. You know, it doesn't mean that, you know, you're less of a man or less of a person. Yeah, if you kind of wool it in and that, you know, chat, talk to people. Yeah. You know, you've got mind, you've got rethink, you've got the advice helpline and that. Go to your GP, chat to your family, your friends, your partner, you know what I mean? And just let people know how you're feeling, man. You know, just kind of like express yourself. Yeah, don't wall it in, yeah? Marla was banned for 10 weeks in 2020. Incident involving Alan Jones. He says an off-field antics, which has included insulting opponents verbally. You know, the England teammate James Haskell with a water bottle, and grabbing Wales skipper Long Jones, grabbed him between the legs, basically, and was just apparently having a laugh, you know what I mean? But
having a laugh, that's, you know, it sounds like it's getting personal.
Spilled
now,
over. You know, sometimes he said, just like winding other people up, it has been his nature for God knows how long. Well, maybe he just wounded up the wrong person on that particular day, you know?
Yeah, I could have caught him at a bad time, you know what I mean? And he just reacted. You know what I mean? And if he has been doing it before, maybe he's done it one too many times.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, you've got to be careful who you kind of like wind up, you know? I mean, like, you know, there's rugby union and rugby league. And just kind of like for our kind of listeners out there, rugby union teams have 15 players while rugby league have 13. Rugby league is generally faster paced due to the fewer players, which creates more space on the pitch. Possession-wise, rugby union allows for more opportunities to contest possession, such as like on the ground, in rucks and mauls, and after a tackle in rugby league, the ball switches sides after six tackles, and there is no contesting the ball after a tackle. So just a few little changes between league and union. There's another kind of like sad kind of story, really, what we'll go through. And this is about an ex-professional player, Chris Armstrong. So you've got one side, which is mental health, depression, anxiety, which can affect people in various ways, leading to breakups with your partner, family breakdowns, and so on and so forth. And the other side of the sport is obviously people getting involved in drugs. Former Tottenham player spared jail for punching and kicking a Tesco's worker who refused to sell him cigarettes when they were closing. And this is Chris Armstrong, you know. And I can remember watching Chris Armstrong on the pitch, and it was a quite handy top of the pitch kind of player. Like I said, used to play for Spurs. Armstrong was struggling with drug addiction in the months before he attacked a worker at Tesco's, the court heard. Armstrong, 50-year-old, made his name, Palace, amongst other clubs, punched and kicked an employer in a row over a packet of cigs. Armstrong admitted this all by beating and criminal damage. So
why didn't you just go to the bleeding petrol station, man, and dog?
You know, sometimes
when doing something like that,
you know, when addiction holds you,
I know, yeah.
You know, it's probably unknown what, you know, the human body is capable of doing. If you crave something, you just want it there and then. It's really sad. I mean, you know, because of his addiction, the judges probably had a little pity on him and gave him an 18-month community order. The sentencing hearing was told that Armstrong has been struggling with addiction and alcohol dependency over the pandemic. There's a lot of people what use the pandemic,
as
isn't
an excuse,
it?
Yeah,
you know, and I don't say this too lightly, but how long ago was the pandemic? You know, we're talking years ago,
yeah.
And I'm not saying that people can't suffer from that, but I think it's just easily used.
I think with these people, if it is drugs, let's give some of them the benefit of the doubt. So you may have been on your drugs before, whatever you were taking, you had it under control. When the pandemic kicked in now and you can't do anything, because I remember myself, my illnesses and stuff like that, and being in the house has never been a problem to me. But when I was told that I couldn't go out and I couldn't do this and I had to shield more than others, or others were shielding like me, it got to me for a few weeks. For about a month or so, it got to me. Who is anybody to tell me that I can't go outside? I'm stood at the door walking to the gate, but I couldn't go through the gate to do anything because of whatever, and it did kind of get to you. Now, if you have this drug use now and you're in that situation, you're just stuck in the house every day, you're going to take more drugs, aren't you? You're going to take more drugs and stuff, so it's going to start affecting you more. If you live with your wife, your kids are going to rile you up if they're making noises. Your wife could just say the slightest thing to you, you pop. This is what certain drugs can do to you, and then you've lost control.
Yeah, can really mess people up, can't it?
Yeah.
I mean, This is what a little bit of what's been going on with Armstrong.
Get ready, because I'm about to expose the real story. Chris Armstrong's journey from a little town to the pro football scene is one of those classic stories about a kid with big dreams and the talent to match. Born on June 19th, 1971, in Newcastle upon Tyne, England, Chris was pretty much born with a football at his feet. In a place like Newcastle in the 70s and 80s, football wasn't just a sport, it was a way of life. As a kid, Chris was like many others in his neighbourhood, always out on the nearest patch of grass, kicking a football around until it got dark. School was fine, but it was after school that really got him excited. That's when he'd get to play football, showing off the moves he was already becoming known for. In those days, his teachers and even friends could see he had something special. But it wasn't just raw talent with Chris, it was his determination. He was the type of kid who'd stay late after school, practicing long after everyone else had gone home. His dedication was off the charts, and it wasn't long before it started paying off. By his early teens, Chris was catching the eye of local scouts. His big break came when he got picked up by Wrexham AFC's youth team. That was a whole new ball game. Moving from playing with school friends to training under seasoned coaches really shaped him. At Wrexham, Chris wasn't just playing. He was learning the real craft of football, sharpening his skills and understanding the game on a deeper level. Those early years at Wrexham really set Chris up. They turned him from a hopeful young kid into a solid striker ready to make waves in the English Football League. It's pretty amazing when you think about how those days playing football after school turned into a professional career. However, it wasn't until he moved to Millwall that he began making waves in the big leagues. Chris quickly made a name for himself at Millwall with his speedy moves and knack for scoring goals. This caught the eye of bigger clubs, and soon he was on his way to Crystal.
And that was just a little bit of flavour from what Chris Armstrong, the kind of like talent, what he had on the pitch. It's just a pity that his exploits off the pitch took him to drug addiction and just avoided the pen.
So is this another case now that his career's ended and he doesn't know what he's going to do with himself?
I would say you've hit the nail on the head with that one. And it's
a serious thing, isn't it, really?
It happens to so many athletes you know. And, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that there's nothing out there for them to do. A lot of them fall into other, you know, whether it's coaching, whether it's doing some media work, or you know, maybe doing some kind of like scouting or something like that.
There's something you can find to, but I don't understand why is it when these people are coming to the end of the career, they must have been involved in certain things in the first place. Why are you picking up on drugs or anything if you wasn't into that in the first place? I don't know, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Why are you picking up drugs when you know, everybody knows the history of how drugs can be. So why are you picking that up? Same with alcohol.
Mm.
I mean, if you do go out and have a pint, it's drinking because you're obsessive, but this sounds like it's a drug-related thing. So why is that always the way out?
Yeah, it's not good, is it, really? You know? And I suppose as well, you know, I mean, the amount of cash, what's going in their account, you know, you'd have been thinking that, you know, this ain't going to last forever.
But it's not.
You know? Maybe kind of like certain role models wasn't around, you know? Maybe Big Brother or something like that weren't saying, listen, you know, save some for a rainy day.
But it's that talking factor again, what you were saying about things that people got thing in the mind that they're not talking to anybody.
Mm. And it's...
You have to talk to people, regardless.
100%, you know. So, I mean, from Chris Armstrong, I want to go into some of the dirtiest players
in the Premiership. And I'm not saying that these players haven't won a fresh or anything like that, but, you know, going to go through some names. I mean, who do you reckon will be in the top 10 of the most dirtiest players the Premiership has ever seen?
Apart from Abramovich and stuff.
Say again?
Apart from Abramovich, what was his name now? He was dirty. Are you talking regular players like now? Or
ever,
any player?
Ever. And then ever to grace the Premiership.
What's his name?
I mean, if I said to you...
I'm going to say somebody...
If I said to you, like, Wayne Rooney was number two, what would you think to that?
Seriously? I know he could have been a bit lighter back in the day, but I want to put him as one of the dirtiest players in number two.
Do you know what? I mean, I was quite surprised with that one as well, because I think Rooney was a bit of a baller for me. You know, he could play. He was aggressive.
He could get aggressive when
in the right manner. Had that kind of swagger about him on and off the pitch. And yeah, he could leave his boot in there as well. I mean, that really surprised me.
I want to see
for Rooney number two. I mean, we'll come to number one later on. I mean, I'll talk about a player who I know quite well, Kevin Davis. Used to play for Chesterfield. Kevin enters at number five, and he was known. He would leave a boot in there as well. And we're talking, you know, the two players what we've mentioned already are actually strikers. Kevin Davis. Davis received, like I said, he was ranked number five, received 92 yellow cards in his career and got sent off five times.
Okay.
How about that? And another player who surprises me is Ashley Young, coming in at number 10. Ashley Young received 85 yellow cards and being sent off four. Now, I think Ashley's probably became, and I'm going to use that word, dirty, as he sort of like the latter part
of his career.
Of his career, yeah. Because, you know, he was quite a quick player, played on the wing. So, you know, as he's kind of like matured and got a little bit older, he's gone into like right back. But he used to play on the wings, quite a busy one. And this one surprised me, Vieira, number 14. I thought Patrick Vieira would have been in the top 10, but Vieira's just outside of that 14. Vieira, 76 yellows and 8 reds. And behind Vieira, you'll know this name, Joey Barton.
That's the one I was trying to remember, Joey Barton. It was him I was trying to remember.
He hasn't been nice on the pitch and off it. And I think Barton reminded me of a bit like Vinnie Jones. It's like not a great player in my opinion. Played for City. I mean, City fans might think, you ain't seen the best of him. But for me, Joey Barton was one of them players that, you know, people's going to know about me.
And we did.
And that's what I'm about.
Even though you mentioned Vinnie Jones, back in the day in the 80s and stuff when they were doing it, it was more of a laugh to us, weren't it? We did really see the dusty play in it. We just thought, yep, that's Vinnie. That's what he does with other players, whatever. We just see the funny side of it, but really, yeah.
Vinnie Jones. I mean, Vinnie Jones doesn't even make their top 20. I think he'd be very disappointed with that.
Oh, definitely. After all them things he's done.
Yeah, yeah. And coming in at the dirtiest.
Go on.
Gareth Barrett was defender, Everton. I think played for Villa as well. 123 yellows and 6 reds cards. Gareth Barry coming in with that one at the top.
So what would you say to that then? Because you know the player.
But Barry, Gareth Barry. I thought
You see the way they've worked it out, really.
Some players ahead of him, but you know.
Yeah, well,
there
that's
you
it. You see, that's it. You would pick other players that you would think is dirties and stuff, but they've worked it and the amount of cards these people have got into. Mm. And that's why they've got that title now, the dirtiest players and stuff like that.
100%.
Other people might not agree with that. I can imagine people at home now shouting, but what about this guy?
Yeah.
So what about that one? You know what I mean? So,
yeah, it's quite true. Yeah.
I don't think they should have said the dirtiest player there. I think they should have just said what with the cards and that. Because if we're going to work it out, that doesn't mean, because I was surprised that Vinny Jones, really, he should have been in the top five as far as I could say.
Yeah, I mean, it surprised me that Vinny Jones ain't in the top 20 for sure. Yeah, we're talking Premier League, but if it was, you know, put the Premier League aside, you'd get Fashta Bash in there, and he loved it.
Yes, yes. What about him? Yes.
I've seen them documentaries on the box, yeah, you know. But yeah, 1851, time's passing. We'll talk about Pep. I wanted to cover this one.
Let me ask you a question, because we always talk about football. Have you ever seen this power slap thing on YouTube?
This what?
Power slap. Have you ever heard of it? It's a sport that's taking off in America. I'm not sure how many years it's been going, but it's like, so me and you stand behind a podium, and we're going to take it in turns, flapping each other across the face. To see if we can knock out a man.
Right,
I've been watching it the last couple of weeks, and I have
heard something like that as well. I'll have to have a look on that on YouTube.
It's different, but I don't know about somebody else. You're just standing there and
they're slapping each other.
They're slapping the palm of their
and it's classed as a sport.
But amazing.
Is it a sport or is it assault?
It's a sport. It's a new sport that's come out. There's a couple of champions out there now. But just to stand there and let somebody give a slap across your face like that, and
I have actually seen something like that actually, but I didn't realise it was a sport to that.
There's some big guys, slim guys, women are doing it too, and everything, whatever.
Wow.
When you're seeing people lie down on the floor from a slap, you realise how hard a slap can be. When people say, it was only a little tap. There's no little taps, my friend. But I've been getting into that this week. Missus actually loves it.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah.
All right, going into the last minutes of the show, we're going to fly through some of these things now. Pep Guardiola says he will stand by Man City, even if they are relegated over alleged breach of financial rules, and claim 75% of the rival clubs want to see them go down. I mean, Pep, for me, he said that, you know, he was hungry for more success, more than ever, right? I'm just going to go through some points here, what I've got. So, hungry more than ever, apparently, spoke to the bigwigs, the England hierarchy, took 2 months to decide that it wasn't for him, for whatever reason, and eventually signed a 2-year deal, and then said, I'm hungry more than ever. To me, you know, you might as well put the clothes in the washing machine and see if they don't come out dry.
See if they spin out properly and everything,
You know what I mean? I mean, take what you can from that. But, you know, like we said, there's 115 Premier League charges. It's all gone quiet on that scene.
Yeah, I was going to ask, we've not heard anything about that recently.
Yeah,
but I was going to also say,
it's all done in house, isn't it? It's all done in house.
I was also going to ask as well, say whatever else. I mean, you guys have mentioned a few players that may be leaving Manchester City, going on to other things. Do you think it has to do with this? Why so many of them seems to be walking?
Not really.
Because I've never really heard that in a Premiership team before, how many players are coming, whether they're coming into the end of the contract and they all just decided to walk or leave, whatever else. But I think with this controversy, what's going on, I think that's why maybe a few of them might be getting out. So,
I mean, you know, if it's you know, the means in it, it'd be like they'll do whatever's necessary.
Get out before the ship sinks.
And I don't think they'd really tie. You know, top class players to
to a contracts and stuff like that. They'd reap the rewards and cash them in. But on to a few predictions into the last five. It's 1855. We've got G here. CV, like I said, being put on gardening duty. And hopefully he'll be back next week. So we've got Crystal Palace. They entertain Man City tomorrow. Palace currently line 17th and City 4th.
Palace is going to be on the finger tomorrow, aren't they?
Well, I think we're going to be seeing something, a different side
we
to
are
the Eagles.
See a different side.
And I think it's their opportunity to take a pop at Manchester City.
And
I'm not saying it's a free hit, but I can see the Eagles, which is Palace, obviously collecting some points out there. Yeah. I think, I mean, just for a stats here, Grealish hasn't scored a goal in 32 games.
Wow.
So that's a stat for you. What that, Mr. CV? I'm going to go for a home win, Palace, to beat Man City. A few minutes remaining.
I'm going for a draw, to be honest.
You're going for a draw?
I think you could hold them to a draw.
Fulham right. v Arsenal. Fulham currently line 6, Arsenal 3rd. No Reece Nelson, because Arsenal is his parent club. Fulham beat the Gunners first time in 12, looking to beat them for the first time in 12 attempts since last season's fixture. To me, there's not much in it with these sides. I won't be surprised of a score draw. Fulham are quite handy. Current line 6. Silva doing a great job as manager up there.
I'm going to go for Arsenal.
On to the Championship. Sheffield Wednesday entertain Preston North End, which brings Heggenbottom into town, the ex-Blades manager, looking to get one over on the Owls. Owls slightly edged this one on current form, but I expect Heggenbottom to run away with the points with Preston North End.
I'm going to go for our boys, Sheffield. Come on, lads. You can do this.
Nah,
man. Let's support the boys across the way over there.
And the last one, which is a Sunday kickoff, West Brom v the Blades. Blades current line top of the league.
Come on, the Blades. Come on, lads.
Baggies,
you
are
got this.
Seventh. Baggies have kind of like scored more goals, but the Blades have conceded less than them. Missing Enel and Souter, two big, massive plays for the Blades in the heart of their defence. I mean, a positive for that one is that they're not injured, but they've been a little bit naughty on the pitch and they have to take five. Just a little bit of news, Kyle Walker again linked with the Blades. Will it happen? I'm not sure. Or will the riches of Dubai lure him over there?
Dubai, man, Dubai. I'm sorry, goodbye, but Dubai, I'm sorry.
And then you've got the takeover in the background. COH Sports will release millions of pounds on permanent deals once the 100 mil takeover goes through. And on about the takeover, do you know West Brom was bought for 60 million and United been bought for 100. 40 million difference.
Not a lot.
Over a football.
Over the football, man. Put football on field and kick ball, innit? Like, this is what happened. Remember the days we used to say we're going to kick ball. Come back, we're going to kick ball in on the park.
And there you have it.
We took it more serious.
G, your services have been much, much grateful.
Yeah, man, my pleasure.
And
entertainment.
And that's from us from next week. We're out of here.
Yeah.